Enough about that. We are going to talk right now with Michael Haney.
Hey, man. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great. I feel compelled to give a little background on the man we're talking to.
Yes,
so,
please do.
First of all, this guy is one of the finest writers on earth. Seriously. I have known him virtually my whole life. He introduced me to everything cool. He is my very best friend. And he happens to work as an editor at Esquire magazine, interviewed Bruce Springsteen, and
wow.
wrote one of the most beautiful pieces I have ever read in any magazine ever. Michael, welcome, man.
Nice to be on. And with an introduction like that, I mean, I might as well just hang up.
Yeah, well,
I got nothing else.
Drop the mic and say,
"I'm just gonna quit while I'm ahead."
Drop the mic and say, "That's it for me."
Exactly, exactly. No, I'm happy to be here. As John said, known each other our whole lives. So, any questions anyone wants to text to me, I can then and be happy to answer questions about John or Dr. John, as we call him now.
I did not anticipate that twist, Mr.
The twist.
Haney. But we got to go to break.
Yeah. I would like to know how long he's been this Team Duffy that I hear of, Michael. Was he always like this, or was he used to be a Team Paul Farver?
He's asking
boy,
about
I'm just happy to be on the show, guys.
What a true friend. But go ahead.
Michael, by the way, was a single man for most of his adult life, has been married since 2011, Mike?
That's correct. Yes, I got. We're talking getting married later. What? I guess I haven't heard the whole show tonight.
No,
yes, I got married.
No,
this is just a general theme.
Paul is not married, and I am, and so we've kind of we've unwittingly created teams here. But
right.
What we really want to talk to you about is this piece that you wrote, and
right.
what it was like to just to be with the man. What was that? What was the
Bruce
experience
Springsteen?
Like?
How long did you get to meet with him too? I want to know that.
So, yeah, I met with him. I spent two very lovely just be very honest, special afternoons with him in New York before. Both afternoons were before he went on stage for his show, which is here in New York on Broadway and is actually closing down in a couple weeks. And you'll be able to see it on Netflix. So if you haven't gotten to New York to see it, it's coming to Netflix on December 16th. So it was two afternoons, which were, you know, for someone like myself and many of us, it was a bit of a psych out going into it. But I sort of had to, I got into the professional space, and it was a pretty transformative for me.
How do you get into a professional space when you're sitting in a room for not one but two afternoons with the boss? How do you do that?
I think like anyone, you keep your focus on the work, and I think, but really, in an interview like this, I always think it's less of an interview and more of what I think you strive to do in all our lives, which is be present and sort of be in the moment and really listening to the other person, and whether it's Bruce Springsteen or anyone else in your life. So it was really, I think, focused on the conversation and just. You know, I always, as a journalist, I always tell other young writers when they're coming up, and they always say, like, how do you do an interview? And I always say, go watch the Chris Farley sketch on Saturday Night Live where he interviews
that was cool.
Paul McCartney. It's like, remember when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome. Like, you don't want to be that guy. So,
what I like about your writing, Mike, and I've had the luxury of having read your writing, since you started, is when you talk to somebody famous, you seem to get down to the deepest level of their humanity and really are able to talk to them person to person. And so that fanboy thing doesn't really show up.
If
it does, you kind of make note of that. And one thing I noticed in this piece in particular is you really focused on Bruce's relationship with his father and then him becoming a father himself. And we focus here on this show on relationships a lot. This is a little complicated, but I'm thinking also about a book you wrote, a memoir about your father. And I was wondering if you felt any connection there with Bruce because of those kind of incomplete, unfulfilled relationships with your fathers.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the connection, but I think my experience. You know, my father died when I was very young, as you know, John, and I wrote this book after visiting friends, which was about, you know, he was a newspaper man there in Chicago for the Sun-Times and Tribune, and died under mysterious circumstances. So I sort of lived this life of absence with my father, but his absence was a presence. And, you know, but I think with Bruce, what I sort of zeroed in on, and, you know, when I read his book and thought about him, was, you know, he talks about, you know, this growing up in this house of great silence and great darkness, and his father would sit in the kitchen and in silence all night, kind of just drinking and brooding in the darkness. And you know, he talks about how his father you know, really didn't like any of his qualities, which were all the qualities, as he said, that his mother had, which was like kindness and art and poetry, and looking at this sort of, like, his father called him a sissy and all these things that, and he would tell him that, you know, a family is weakness. And so all these things that as Bruce told me, he learned early in his life to despise in himself. Yeah. And he sort of spent, you know, his whole life trying to then sort of go in search of how to become complete. So it was a very intense conversation, which he revealed that, as he said, he had two breakdowns in his life and spent a large part of his life working through the sort of what he wanted from as he says in the show, you know, his father was his greatest hero, right, and also his biggest foe. And I think, you know, whether that's me or Bruce, but I think most of us in our lives at some point, with at least one or both of our parents, that's just part of the dynamic that has to be worked out. And I think, you know, I think one thing he said which really stuck with me, we talked about this sort of journey that we're all on, and he said, when he spent time with the doctor and talking and thinking about things, he said, you know, what is the point of analysis, and what is the point of thinking about these things? The point is to turn anger into love.
Right.
And, you know, then he sort of linked it up, and he said, then that's really what I try and do in a song as well. Is like, once I've taken the anger, it's like, and I think there was, you know, one of those moments when I sat there and thought, like, that's some great wisdom. And to go back to your point, John, I think what I search for in all these interviews is to find, as you said, you're right, the humanity, because we don't, and I think that's what everyone is, whether you're Bruce Springsteen or your brother, you're looking for an authentic connection in a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope that's what I think you try and inspire with folks.
Michael, we have so many more I have so many questions to ask you about the things you said, but we have to take a break. Can you stay on with us for a little longer?
I'd be delighted to. All right, I'll be here.
We're going
to
take a break here on WGN. You guys, if you have questions, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We're talking about Bruce Springsteen with Michael Haney. You are listening to The Night Side with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We are interviewing Michael Haney, who actually got to interview the boss. And Michael, you brought up so many points that I had so many questions, not just as a fan. I'm not going to hit you, but I'm not a therapist. But I've been sitting next to one for a few weeks now. And the question Michael, you said that it was a very intense conversation that you had with him over these two afternoons. During the conversations, when he's talking about his breakdowns and all these things, did you have to stop the interview and just did he have to compose himself, or was he just talking, you know, like, hey, it's the weather outside?
No, it was a very, you know, the thing about it, you learn about him is he, I think, is probably one of the most considered thinkers I've ever interviewed. And by that, I mean, like, I'd ask him a question and he thinks about his answer and he gives fully formed, very thoughtful answers. He's a very articulate and introspective thinker. So I think it's, and I think there were a couple moments where he would just really pause and compose himself, and you know, from for the emotion. But I think as well, you know, he doesn't hold anything back. I mean, he has. I think he lives his life with no veils, and I think that's. I think one of the most interesting moments in the interview came where we were talking about, how you because much of this show is really about, as he calls it, like how you become yourself, and that, you know, that he says, I think he's got this very powerful quote where he in the show where he after he said to me, he says, you know, your coming of age has to be earned, and it's not given to anyone, and it takes, you know, you've got to a willingness to confront all of your very fearsome and dangerous elements of your life and your past and your history, and he says, you know, it's very difficult. I said, well, do you feel that you've finally gotten to some place in your life that you know who you are? And he says, you know, it's comes and goes. And I said, yeah, I said, I just want to, I laughed and I said, I just want to stop you right there because, you know, a lot of fans would read this right now and say, dude, you're Bruce effing Springsteen. Like, what do you mean you don't know who you are?
Right.
And he just laughed and he said, he sort of hung his head down and his chin into his chest. And he laughed and he shook his head and he looked up at me and then he said, well, first of all, Bruce effing Springsteen is a creation. Mm. And he said, even I don't know what it is sometimes, and I have a pretty good handle on it. And it was, you know, he said, this is part of the stuff. He's like, you know, it's a thing. And he said, and then he said, you know, the real test is that's identity, which is fluid. And he said, like, even at my age, I'm 69, I'm still trying to figure it out. And he says, all I know is, anyone who thinks they've got it figured out, they do not have it figured out. And, you know, I think it's, you know, to go back to what John said, I think that's part of what I think the power of the reception that the piece has had is because he's speaking very candidly, and we were so used to our heroes and his bluster and all this stuff, and, you know, no one's ever vulnerable and you got to be macho and all, but here's a guy saying, like, I'm just telling you, everyone, like, it's not easy. There's days I get up, I'm not sure what I'm doing or who I am or how I'm getting there. But you've got to sort of get up and do that fight every day. But I think his honesty and his vulnerability, I think it's that's what's been really to see the reaction to the piece on social media, the people very really really responding to that.
You know, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about, Mike. You know, in the broader context of what's going on with celebrities kind of exposing themselves and being far more vulnerable about their suffering different mental illnesses and mental health issues, this feels like a piece that is, like, of the time. Did you get the impression that the last few years since he wrote his autobiography and did this play, to me, this all feels a little, and even your interview with him, feels like an extension somehow of the therapy he's been in for, you know, the bulk of his adult life, and we're just all kind of a party to it in a way. Did you get that impression at all?
Yeah, you know, to give some of that context is a great question is, you know, as I said, he's 69 and he just turned 69 and he says he started, you know, when he hit 60, it wasn't because he hit 60, but right around the time he was 60, he had a second sort of breakdown and it lasted about a year or so. And where he said part of it was, and he said, I don't know why, but he said there was a good 3 or 4 months where I cried at anything, and he said I couldn't stop crying. Yeah. And I couldn't get out of bed, and I didn't know any, and you know, he said I finally went to a doctor and he said, listen, we can fix this, and he gave him, you know, prescription for Klonopin and got him to study down. He said, you know, got me balanced, and but I think the autobiography and the show has been, I think, you know, an artistic search for him as well as a sort of individual search. But I think, you know, when we talked about that intense, as you said, those emotions, John, and getting to sort of, you know, I said, listen, we've seen, you know, in the last year or two, whether it's Anthony Bourdain or Robin Williams, you know, people who we think are, everything must be great for them, right? And all of a sudden, you just don't know, right?
Yeah.
And he had this really powerful description of it, because I said, you know, if I read, you know, look at some of the things you said, Bruce, I said, I could be quite honest, I just said, this is a question I was afraid to ask. I said, have you ever considered suicide? Or, and he held the hell of his hand right away. He said, no, I have never done that. He said, but I certainly have been in a bad enough place where I could see why people make that decision.
Yeah.
And he told a very poignant, he was talking about a good friend of his who he's described as almost a son that he mentored. And I know who the first enemy wouldn't talk about. I don't want to name him because we didn't name him in the piece. Bruce just sat there and shook his head. He said, you just don't know in those last moments. And he said, someone's in a bad place. And then he said, you know, another night, another way, someone else is there. It might not have happened. And he said, but sometimes, and he said, someone just gets caught out in the rain, and you don't know, and we never know. And he said, that's the sadness of all this stuff, is you just, you don't know why it happens. But he recognized what we said about these people. There's the public people, Bourdain, and these people who clearly had struggled with something, and then they didn't know how to reach out for it. And I think that's part of, I think, the importance of the conversation we had in the piece, and you can read it on Esquire.com, is, you know, that he's saying it's, if you're struggling with it, you're not alone. And it's not something that should be isolating you. In fact, you know, it should be, you know, and Bruce also said this in our conversation, that, you know, what he didn't learn until later in his life, until he was in his 40s, was that father of his who was sitting there brooding in the dark kitchen all night, kind of slowly drinking those beers,
right,
was in fact self-medicating, because they didn't find out until his father was well in his 60s, where he was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bruce said to me, he said, that's hard enough, but what you also learn when that you get that diagnosis or you're of someone you love is it's genetic, and it runs in you. And he's like, I got to watch myself now.
Yeah.
And that's a very brave stuff for him to put out there. Mm-hmm. And I think when you read it, you realize we're all carrying around these things in us that we think we got to keep secrets, and here's a guy who's sharing it with us.
Yeah, the strength of vulnerability, definitely.
Absolutely.
And your the idea of being out in the rain is something I borrowed already from your piece and used in the therapy room. We're gonna take our quick break. Will you stick around for just another minute, Mike?
Absolutely, John.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
You are listening to Nightside with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We are talking to Michael Haney, who interviewed the boss, Bruce Springsteen, for Esquire magazine. We will come back. We're going to talk to you, Michael, and after that, we're going to do some more talk for cover the texts and messages you guys have been sending. If you guys want to call in, ask us or ask questions of Michael, 312-981-7200, or ask us questions. We'll get back to the Team Duffy and Team Farvar word. But Michael, we still have some questions for you as two super fans of Bruce Springsteen. Are you still there? Are you still with us, Michael?
I'm still here.
It's like when someone like famous touches someone, like, wait, so can we touch you? Like, it's like, it's like that's a PG-13 question of the answer of what I was going to ask you. But I had a question for you. So as an artist myself, a lot of people that are hesitant about getting therapy, you know, you talked about the anger that he had, and he went through therapy to address the anger, for lack of a better word. Did he ever have a fear that he would lose that drive that's created the creativity if he's, for lack of a better word, healed? Did he talk about that?
No, you know, he never did. I think he's talked about it a little bit, is that he saw no choice, that he wanted to, he, in fact, that he had sort of stopped stopped being creative at a certain point because he just was so down, right? And yeah. so, in fact, yeah. you know, he needed to sort of, it wasn't that he was fearful, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I think that's, you know, that sort of view of you've got to be the tortured artist. He didn't want to be the tortured artist. He didn't want to, it was, in fact, he was just frozen.
That, right. Well, that's a fine line that artists face where, you know, you have this tortured, where you don't want to get to the line where you're so sad and depressed that you see no bright, you see no future. But then at the same time, if you don't have that anger, you don't have that fire in your belly that's created all this amazing art, whatever it is, whether you're
the
a musician,
edge, right?
The edge,
yeah.
you feel like that's you right. lose that edge. And I know from people I've spoken to and even myself, you know, when I was hesitant, to have therapy, I was like, well, I do stand-up comedy, and my therapy is being on stage. I mean, I talk very openly about these things, and I know a lot of musicians are the same way.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, no, it's a good point, and it, I think it's interesting for Bruce is, you know, that he channeled a lot of that sort of frustration and hurt into, like, you know, as they say in the piece, you know, he just kind of made this joyful noise and he sort of, like, you know, and I think he also said, you know, part of the reason he's even famous for doing those 3-4 hour concerts is he kind of didn't want to be alone, you know, he kind of right. just wanted, he needed to sort of, that was what he was working through, you know, like getting, you know, I'm going to put all this out there. And what I think was, you know, wanting to sort of be seen as an artist. And I think that's one other thing I thought was sort of super interesting that we talked about. I mean, you know, John has written this book about the available parents, and John's talked to me a lot about, you know, how to be there for your kids. And one of the things that, you know, Bruce landed on just as well was he said, you know, he said what he never had from his father, he was not present. And what he learned, what he wanted, he never wanted to lose his kids the way his father lost him. So he always made sure with his 3 kids, all, you know, I said, what is your advice to someone who's raising kids right now? He said, just be present. And he said, be fully present. And he kept using that word over and over. And then he even joked, he said, you know, sometimes all you got to do is show up. You get a lot of credit for just showing up. And he said, you know, acknowledging that now his kids are in their 20s. And he said, you know, and now on the rare occasion I do get a question that someone actually does want my opinion, I still get answers, you know. But so I think it's just about, you know, being present and being there for people in your life.
I'm smiling for 2 reasons. First of all, I love that passage in your story and that story he told, Mike. And I'm kind of, as you're talking about the joyful noise that he kind of converted his pain into, I'm thinking about the first time we saw him when we were kids. And I remember that was kind of the first time in my life I felt like that element of joy, you know, just standing there right. next to you, like, wow, you know, like life can feel this electric and exciting and joyful. But what I want to ask you about is one thing I think your piece touches on with him that I think is kind of covert is this shifting definition of masculinity. Like he's always kind of been this archetype, even like down to wearing his father's work clothes of the quintessential American male, right? And here now he's showing a different way of being masculine. Do you feel like is there something deliberate about that with the shift in the definition of masculinity? Because clearly he's shifted to a much more vulnerable persona than the guy who's standing on stage with a 15-piece band swinging back and forth with a saxophone player.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, and we had a conversation, obviously, as you just said, there's a lot in the air right now about how do you raise young men in this moment, and what does it mean to be a boy, and how do you sort of transition into manhood, and what are the responsibilities of manhood? And he said, you know, we talked about his 2 sons who are, as I said, both in their 20s, and I said, it must be a lot of conversations around your dinner table these days. And he said, look, Patty and my wife and I are very lucky. We've got 2. Fortunately, we have 2 good boys and 2 good men. And I said, well, what are their qualities? What do you think make up a good man today? And he said, you know, first of all, they're sensitive, they're respectful of others. And, you know, he said, and he envies them because He said, I was raised with this 1950s sensibility of manhood, which he had to contend with. And but he said, you know, his kids are their attitudes about the they're free of a lot of these archetypes that imprisoned him. And I think, you know, he's able to sort of raise his sons that way because he was able to sort of work towards evolving what it meant to be a man now.
Yeah.
You know, and as he said, you know, just because you're 40 or 50, you don't stop, you should not stop trying to keep growing and keep evolving, right? So I think that's part of what he really saw as, like, you know, the core is always there, but I think his values and those qualities have to keep evolving.
Michael, this is so cool. I haven't read the article yet. I'm looking forward to reading it myself. Where can people read it? Where is the information?
You can read it right now on Esquire.com. It's right there. We've got it up, and it's available on the newsstands as of Tuesday. You can buy a hard copy. Great cover of Bruce.
Beautiful, sort of beautiful cover.
Him talking about his. I asked him. I said, "Do you have a code you live by?" And this is on the cover and the cover line, because he said, "You know, I've never tried to articulate it." And he thought about it, and he said, "I'm steadfast, honest, and true," and I thought, you know, as I say in my piece, like, those are pretty good values, and a pretty good motto. We need more of that, all of us, you know, not just right now, but all, and to sort of live by that in our lives. It's a good stars to navigate by.
What a great motto for a man. Before we let you go, I just want to point out to folks that Michael is also the author of a best-selling memoir called After Visiting Friends that is just one of the most beautiful books I have ever read. I strongly, strongly recommend that you stop at a bookstore and pick up the hard copy of Esquire and After Visiting Friends, both with beautiful covers and both with beautiful prose inside. And Michael, we thank you so much for joining us.
Man. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to coming back.
Yeah, looking forward to talking to you again. Love you like a brother. Talk to you soon.